Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
To the right side, Altuve, inning over. Verlander put the two on to start the inning. Struck out Hicks. Frazier, the long fly ball. And then the ground out by Headley. Time to stretch.
That is my favorite Justin Verlander memory with the Houston Astros. What's yours? You get to answer that to open up today's show, the Paul Gallant Show, the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. That was Game 6 of the 2017 ALCS, a series that Justin Verlander, now with the New York Mets, after signing a contract, 2 years, $86 million with New York, which we broke right here on the show at 11:30 yesterday. He's pitched his last game with the Astros. But back in 2017, it's Game 6. I'm wearing my running game clothing, come and take it, orange Astros shirt. It's got a bat that looks like the Goliad cannon and a little star on it. It's a fantastic shirt. I hope running game clothing throws those out again so I can buy another one. Anyway, I go to that stadium with a bunch of Yankee fan friends talking endless bleep to me. With the Astros down 3-2 when Justin Verlander absolutely balled. And I know this postseason numbers, blah, 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 and this World Series numbers, blah, blah, blah. The guy had an incredible run in Houston. So we're going to open up today's show sending him a proper farewell. Sean Mapes behind the glass. What's your favorite memory of Justin Verlander with the Houston Astros?
I'd probably go with the no-hitter against Toronto. That was really fun. Even all the postseason success and all that kind of, just blends together. We're not one other than that, other than Game 6 in 2017. None of them really, stand out super among all of them. But so I'll go with, also, maybe my favorite memory actually is just seeing the alert on my phone that the Astros traded for Justin Verlander at the last second. So that actually, I'm changing my answer. My favorite moment of Justin Verlander was me finding out that the Astros got Justin Verlander.
That was a total shock. I didn't think trades of that caliber could happen at the waiver trade deadline.
That doesn't exist anymore.
No.
They saw the Astros get Justin Verlander. They're like, no mas.
Classic Rob Manfred. Always stopping the Astros from doing what's necessary to win. Some call that cheating. I wouldn't. I call that gamesmanship. But to go back in time to when that happened, Verlander's got not the best ERA, 3.82 with the Detroit Tigers. And you're not even 100% sure what kind of Verlander you're going to get. But he closed out the 2017 regular season with the Astros 5-0 with a 1.06 ERA. His 2018 season, he's second in the American League Cy Young Award with a 16-9 record and a 2.52 ERA. 2019, when the Astros go back to the World Series, 21-6, 223 innings pitched, the most in baseball, a .803 walks, hits per innings pitched, and he wins the Cy Young Award. MVP finalist in both 2018 and 2019, though very down the list. And of course, you have this past season where he had a career best 1.75. ERA over the course of the year. And, This is a guy who had an incredible run here. I hope that we appreciate him. What's your favorite goodbye music, Sean? Is there any song that you'll play when you're, you know, thinking about how something has finally gotten to the end? Like maybe it's End of the Road by Boyz II Men, or maybe it's Good Riddance by Green Day. And then you have like a montage of Justin Verlander pitching for the Astros. What's yours?
Well, the Green Day one is big slideshow at like eighth grade graduation.
Yes, 100%.
So I probably wouldn't go with that. Probably go with this.
It's never goodbye.
I actually cried in the movie theater at this point.
Who did it? It's the best part of the Fast and Furious franchise. Little Wiz Khalifa thrown in the mix.
Charlie Pluth, my guy.
Is that the guy singing?
I think I got his name.
Yeah, I thought it was Sam Smith or something. I don't know.
Same thing.
Yeah. It's a man with a rather, you know, effeminate voice. We're fine. I have an effeminate voice. Everyone knows this. So that's one option. But this is mine, okay? Because, you know, you go back to the 1990s. Get a little Sarah McLachlan action. And I'm not talking about the really sad ASPCA commercials. No, there's another song that you should play when you're saying goodbye to somebody.
I will remember you.
No.
Will you remember me?
No.
Don't let your love
what a banger. We will remember you, Justin Verlander. I was tired when you pitched in the World Series, not gonna lie. You know, wore me out a little bit. I was sitting on the edge. The Astros were sitting on the edge. Okay, that's enough Sarah McLachlan.
Okay.
I feel like I'm going to cry now because I'm going to miss Justin Verlander.
If you're watching the video, you would actually kind of be laughing. It's a very funny video.
The music video is terrible. I actually did watch it earlier
today. 90s.
Yes, so 90s. Some guy like with a ponytail and flannel. He's like walking down the street, I think looking for the person that he remembers, hoping that she'll remember him. And then at the end of the song, like they do remember each other. And then they're probably... a problem-filled relationship that featured a lot of 12 a.m. fights and the occasional thrown beer bottle will end. It'll run its natural course, and then these two will be back in the concrete jungle of New York looking for love without dating apps. Got to hand numbers out. Oof, barbarians. Anyway, as far as Verlander's time here in Houston, I do think he should be eligible for a retired number, but I understand any pushback on that, given that if we're really thinking about Verlander's tenure with the Astros, it's really three full seasons. It's 2018, it's 2019, it's this past season. Because 2020, of course, he gets hurt first game of the year. Like, that's it. And yeah, he had the awesome stretch run in 2017, which should count as a full season. But this is a guy that's not going to go into Cooperstown as a Houston Astro. I think leaving for the New York Mets sort of confirms that now that he's had three different chapters in his career, which he talked about, he is going to end up going into Cooperstown as a Detroit Tiger. And by the way, that's the right thing to happen. He should be a Detroit Tiger. Those poor bastards need all of the happy moments that they can get. There's a great slideshow, too, that Matt... actually, check that. The Chronicle, I think, might have stopped with slideshows. I could be wrong on this. But Matt Young does a great job with putting together like top 10 lists for the Chronicle. And he had a list of Verlander's best moments with the Astros. I started cracking up hysterically when one of them was May 1st of 2018. Ken Giles punches himself in the face. But you might have forgotten that Justin Verlander struck out 14 Yankees, giving up three hits in eight scoreless innings with 16 batters in a row before Giles came in and blew it and punched himself in the face. You have his win in Dodger Stadium, where he goes 7 in 2/3. This was 9 months after the Astros had won the World Series back in 2018, the specific date, August 3rd of 2018. It's a nice list. I felt his time here should be remembered. I think we all should feel that way. And I again, want to tell all those people that have brought up the postseason stuff, just chill, okay? Yeah, it wasn't ideal, but the guy's an important member of this franchise's history, and I don't think that they win the first World Series without him. I don't know that they get back to the World Series that they were able to without him either, and I know that he only was pitching in 3 of those World Series. He wasn't there for the 2021 World Series. Everyone got all butthurt about that. But it was a great time here. So, Justin, I will remember you. I hope you will remember us. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coming up next, I heard the Killer Bees discussing this a little bit yesterday, and it's something I've gone back and forth on. The Texans are going to have the first overall pick in this year's coming draft. Should they draft a quarterback with that first pick? To help us answer that question, Chris Landry, a guy who's been an NFL coach, an NFL scout, a college scout as well, he is going to join us to answer that question. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
This is the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
A couple of things to clean up on the HRNP listener line before we move on to the HRNP guest line. One person suggested a farewell song to Justin Verlander, I Will Always Love You by Whitney Houston from The Bodyguard. I don't know if I'm going to go that far, you know? I'm not going to go that far. I have a story about that I'll share with you later in the show. Also, history clarification. It wasn't the Goliad cannon. The cannon is from the Battle of Gonzales, from the Come and Take It flag. Well, I appreciate that. I'm trying to get better with my Texas history. Didn't have a class like you guys all did. Anyway, joining me right now is a man who has a ton of experience around football. Coach, scout, administrator in college football and at the NFL. He has a website that you should check out, LandryFootball.com. He's also on Twitter, at LandryFootball. It is Chris Landry. Chris, what's going on?
Paul, how are you doing?
I am doing wonderful, and I need some help, okay? Every single Sunday this year, everyone in Houston who has suffered through a Houston Texans game has been subject to watching Kyle Allen or Davis Mills. They're in a bad spot. They're going to have the first overall pick in this year's coming draft. And I think some people are starting to wonder if they should, given that this organization seems to be very far away from being a stable place for a young quarterback, if the Texans should take a QB with that first overall pick. If you were in that spot, do you have to take Bryce Young, or do you maybe go another route with the first overall pick of the draft and per tankathon, what would be the 13th overall pick from Cleveland?
Well, the first thing that you have to do is what you're talking about is draft strategy and draft management. And that's not relevant at this point. What's important is that you properly evaluate your team and you deal with free agency first, and you deal with, the evaluation process of the players in this draft. You know, everybody thinks they know who the best players are because they read it on the internet. Who's this guy's? That's not scouting, okay? That's just media talk, okay? So what you have to do is evaluate the players. So the answer to the question is very simple, is if you feel like a Bryce Young or a C.J. Stroud or whoever it is, if you're looking at the quarterbacks, just to address that, if you feel like they're the type of quarterback that you can – build a team around, you absolutely take them. You don't take them because they're a quarterback. You take them because you have them graded. I think it's important to understand that if you're going to set your draft board up correctly, you have to grade players regardless of need and regardless of position. Who are the best players? Now, once you do that, then you can make some decisions on this guy is pretty close grade-wise to that guy, and you know, this guy's a little bit more of a need, then we can do that. But if you falsely grade, meaning you overgrade a guy because it's a need, you're not helping your team. You're falsely setting up your draft board, which you're setting yourself up for failure. So the Texans have a lot of needs. The answer is they absolutely need a quarterback. But they also, it's not an easy fix because they need to put a good team around them. So they're not going to win until they get a good quarterback. But if they get a good quarterback, a really good quarterback, they're not going to win if they don't have a good team around them. It's not an easy fix. I've done it before. I've done it in the fair city that you are living in before. And it's not an easy thing. The evaluation process is about understanding what you have, what's out there, what are the options. But quarterback, if you've got an elite player there, and you certainly don't have one, then I think you've got to strongly consider. And you don't pass them up because, well, we're not good enough yet. We're going to wait. Wait for what? You ain't going to be around to draft the guys if you wait. You have to draft accordingly. And if you don't feel one of them is the right fit, or then you move on. But that's the way you determine it. So it really comes down to what they think of Bryce Young or a C.J. Stroud or whatever. And I think you got to do that. But the whole strategy of, well, let's take this guy and then let's try at 13 to get this guy, only if you like a guy that's maybe a little bit in the eyes of maybe the league a little bit less and you like him better, then that's a strategy. But it's all rooted in your evaluation, and it better be correct evaluation.
You mentioned Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, and Chris Landry with me from LandryFootball.com, a guy who's got a ton of experience. The front office is here in Houston. He's worked at this college level as well. Between Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, who do you think is going to be the better pro? And obviously there's a lot of projection and guessing when it comes to that.
Now, they're both different. Bryce is a little bit more intuitive. He's a little bit more out of the pocket. He's got a lot of Tua qualities, but with a little bit more intuitiveness and field vision and understanding. Tua's worked his way to that. Bryce is a little bit more advanced. Now, again, to my point, they've done a really good job in Miami with Tua, coaching the scheme, but also the talent around him. They've done a really good job with a lot of weapons, so all of that has to work into it. CJ's more of a pocket guy. He's not quite as decisive, probably a little bit more of a platform thrower and is a little bit more accurate as a platform thrower, but both will be scrutinized very closely, and I think it really depends upon what you want. Both are going to have very high grades. Since I still do work for NFL teams as a consultant, we're encouraged to not publicly talk about guys until they officially declare, but these are guys that obviously are going to be scrutinized. And while I haven't completed my grade yet on them, they're going to be graded very highly, at least. That's where I have them initially, with still some more work to do.
All right. We'll definitely talk to you about some of those grades a little bit further down the line, so that you get to actually, you know, talk about guys who have officially committed. This is just where we're at, Chris, right now, watching
right.
The Texans. Like, we're talking about the draft. We've been talking about the draft to some degree for basically the last month and a half. So,
yes.
Yeah, that's the state of football in this city. And thinking about it from that perspective, the way that you laid it out is one, and I think what everybody who follows football should agree with. You should set up a draft board and have who you think the best player is at the top of it and draft that guy if he is available. Because, yeah, drafting a quarterback for the sake of drafting a quarterback, that's not necessarily a smart move, especially if, say, your organization isn't going to be able to support him. But I would also imagine that in your experience, you've maybe been a part of some front offices where there's pressure coming from the top down. I think the big problem for the Texans right now, Chris, is that people just don't care about the team. And one of the ways to, at the very least, get some interest back, if you're thinking about it from like a non-football perspective, if you're an owner, you're like, hey, if I get a quarterback, maybe some people get a little more excited about this team and buying tickets and coming back into the fold in 2023. Have you ever experienced situations like that where the front office is kind of overruling what you have seen from a football perspective?
Well, I had left the Oilers and moved on in my career, Oilers/Titans. But after I left, Bud Adams instructed that organization to draft Vince Young, even though I don't, I know that the general manager and head coach preferred not to. But so, yes, it does happen. Now, and yeah, I think it does happen at other places. And so I have seen it. Unfortunately, I haven't been a part of it. It's not something that I would do. But I also understand that there is that pressure. And it's more the pressure. I don't care about the media pressure, public pressure. It's when the owner kind of dictates it. It makes it makes it difficult. That's who you answer to, and that can become problematic. Which is why you win in this league with owners that can allow you to do your job correctly. There are two types of organizations in the NFL: ones who have quarterbacks, ones who are looking for quarterbacks. So you're not guaranteed to win if you have a great quarterback. But you're guaranteed to not win if you don't have one. So if all else is equal, and just to make sure we're clear, if you've got guys that are graded highly, and I just mentioned a couple of them, but I think, a quarterback, then you have all ties go to taking the quarterback. Now, if you're, Kansas City and you happen to acquire the first pick in the draft because – of a trade, and you're not going to draft a quarterback number one. You're going to take a Will Anderson. You're going to take a Jalen Carter. You're going to take somebody like that because you have your quarterback locked up, and you're Buffalo. You're one of those teams. You would pass on it, but other than that, if you have a good quarterback and you got a chance to get a great one, then absolutely you can't pass on a guy that you feel is that good. Because those guys, they just make a whole lot of difference. I mean, it's just they transform an organization and a team, and yet that doesn't buy you anything other than a chance. Now you got to go out and finish out the rest of the roster. But the whole thing about, well, let's do this. Is it better to draft the quarterback, then build a team around him, build a team around him, then draft the quarterback? That's not a strategy either one. The quality of the player in a given draft dictates where you go with those picks. I don't think the draft board has to speak to you if you set it up correctly. If you don't set it up correctly and you manipulate needs, well, then all you're doing is you're getting lesser players at needs, and then you turn around and you've got a lot of needs. And in this day and age, what you think is a huge strength can become a weakness overnight because of free agency, injuries, what have you. So you can't be, hampered by what the needs are. The quality of players and a quarterback, having and paying two great quarterbacks is difficult. If you've got a really good one that's maybe towards the end, if you're Green Bay and you draft Love, you had Rodgers, that makes some sense because you're looking towards the future. But if you got a young quarterback, that would be the exception to that. Other than that, you got to take quarterback. So I guess what I'm saying is I think that there is a strong probability and likelihood that they would take a quarterback because I think there are a couple of them that are certainly merit consideration. And even if they are close in grade to a Will Anderson or a Jalen Carter, it's tougher to find that quarterback than any other position.
He is Chris Landry. He was a scout with the Oilers, the Browns, an assistant coach at LSU. An unbelievable resume. You want to check out his website for all things football, LandryFootball.com, or follow him on Twitter, @LandryFootball. Chris, this was fun. Let's do it again as we get closer and closer to the NFL draft. Appreciate your time today.
Oh, thanks for having me. And if I don't talk to you before, happy holidays to you and all your listeners. Thanks a bunch.
Same to you, Chris. Again, Chris Landry, @LandryFootball on Twitter, LandryFootball.com. Coming up next, it is the 10-minute drill. My Lord and Savior delivereth once again. Plus, Titans in a little trouble. That's happy. That's exciting for me. We'll talk about all of that next in the 10-minute drill.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Jack! Hush!
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time.
It's third down. Underneath. And touchdown, Rashad White. Tie game with the extra point to come.
My Tom is an awesome Tom. He's better than the average Tom. If your name is Tom, you are not that Tom. My Tom is an awesome Tom. Tom Brady's the best. Now, I don't know if this is going to jumpstart a 2020-esque run for the Bucs down the stretch. I really don't know. In fact, I doubt it because it does seem like this Bucs team has a lot of issues when it comes to scoring, when it comes to running the football. But gotta love seeing Tom Brady down 16-3 late with what? Like 6 minutes left, helping rally the Bucs back for a victory. Glorious to me. Little controversy in this game, Sean. We were touching on this before the start of the show. There was a moment where Mark Ingram caught a pass, and it's second down, and I want to say 10, and he runs towards the right sideline. I guess he was banged up, and he ran out of bounds a yard short, and everyone's saying, like, the fix is in. Mark Ingram shaving points. Doesn't seem like it was a very fair critique of Mark Ingram.
Also, where I saw it was from Warren Sharp, who I do like and respect. But sometimes on Twitter, I feel like he gets a little...
He is trolly as hell,
like,
on Twitter
now. Like, in hot
takey. Yes.
Yeah, but for the most part, the information is good. It's all the other... 50% of his tweets are Rex Chapman tweets.
Oh,
and he posts the video of Mark Ingram running out of bounds, and he says, this was the game. Saints put an injured Ingram back into the game. He caught an open pass, ran short of the sticks. Third and one, incomplete pass. Fourth and one, they punt. Unreal. And then I look at the video, and I'm like, wow, because I also was watching the Rockets. And, there's 6:05 left when he runs out of bounds, and they're up 2 touchdowns. Call me crazy. I don't think that's where they blew the game. I think it was the 2 straight touchdown drives with 6 minutes left. I think that's what cost them the game.
Yeah, that as well. I'm shocked that they came back in this one. One of my buddies, who is also a diehard Tom Brady fan, but not even a Patriots fan, he likes Brady because Brady went to Michigan, and also because one time a small child confused him for Tom Brady, and he talks about this all the time. He doesn't look that similar to Tom Brady. There's a little similarities, but like not that similar to Tom Brady. He was texting me updates of the game, and I'm like, well, I'm watching the Rockets in double overtime and James Harden pooping his pants in his return to Houston, which was glorious, but there is a part of me that feels like I was a little sacrilegious not attending church of my Lord and Savior. So the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, firm command of the NFC South at 6-6. The 5-8 Falcons are in second place. The Saints, last place in the division, at 4-9, at least they have a first-round pick. Oh, they traded it to Philadelphia. I guess Chris Olave is worth it, but that is one that I think is going to hurt. I think if the draft were to be today, the Saints would have the 5th overall pick, and the Philadelphia Eagles have it. That sucks. Just when you thought it couldn't get worse than having to watch Andy Dalton every Sunday while Jameis Winston's soul hurts. So I feel for you Saints fans out there. Hey, at least it's not the referees that are screwing you over this time. Also around the NFL, we didn't get to touch on this. I love watching the Titans get their asses kicked because their fans are very sensitive and they're constantly demanding respect for reasons that I can't quite understand. Tennessee is in firm command of the AFC South with a 7-5 record. They are very, very far ahead of the 4-8-1 second place Colts and the 4-8 Jaguars and the 1-10-1 Texans. But after their loss 35-10 to the Eagles on Sunday, Mike Vrabel was talking about how this team might be at a crossroads. I wonder what's going on in the locker room hearing this clip.
Well, I mean, I think we're at a crossroads. I told the team I think we're at a crossroads and kind of how we, you know, want to continue down this season. And, we can't point fingers. You know, we have to assume that each and every one of us didn't do a good enough job because we didn't. We have to come to work with greater energy and greater resolve to prepare to win a football game against a division opponent. And, it sucks losing. It sucks getting beat the way we did. But we have to, we got to make a decision. You know, how much are we willing to invest and trust in what the coaches are doing, trust in what each and other players are doing. So I think it's a critical time for us.
We're going to do some impromptu math here when it comes to the remaining schedules for all of the teams that are technically in the running for the AFC South crown. So the Titans, the rest of the way, they will play the Jaguars on the road against the Chargers. Those are both wins, right? The Texans, a home game against the Cowboys and at the Jaguars. I think that Tennessee's got a good chance to win four of their last five. They'll probably win three of their last five and finish with a 10-7 record. But say they were to lose out, I think they still have a chance of winning the division. And it really depends on what the Jaguars do, because the Jaguars would have to sweep the Titans in the two games that they play in the last five games. Jacksonville, though, has to play the Cowboys and the Jets, who are both better than them. The Jets, maybe it's a little bit closer. They also have to play the Houston Texans, who, yes, stink, but have not lost to the Jaguars in a while. The Texans continue to beat the Jaguars. I don't know why that has been such a one-sided rivalry, especially over the last year and a half, and especially with the game earlier this year. But, yeah, I think the Titans could lose out and still win the AFC South. That's how bad this division is. So they might be at the crossroads, but it's okay. You know, you might miss your Uncle Charles. You're still going to get to the playoffs even if you act emo for the next 5 weeks and can't get out of your funk.
The second place team in the AFC South already fired their coach and has someone on ESPN and Get Up coaching their team.
Yes, that would be Jeff Saturday of the Indianapolis Colts.
That's the state of the division. We have someone who tweeted out the Raiders stink and then went and beat the Raiders.
The Colts have a bye this week after getting smoked by the Cowboys on Sunday. At the Vikings, loss. At the Chargers, toss up. I think I lean with the Chargers in that one, but the Chargers going to Chargers. That's always a thing. That's a Monday Night Football game. Ugh. At the Giants, Texans to wrap up the year. So, I guess that theoretically the Colts could win the AFC South if the Titans lost out and the Colts finished the year right now with a 4-8-1 record. Say the Colts finish 7. I think it would be.
It would be 8-8-1 or
7-9-1. That would be how. That's the path to winning the AFC South. God, what a wretched division. 713-780-3776 to call into the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. 713-780-ESPN. Do appreciate Chris Landry's thoughts on the Houston Texans and some of the routes they could go in the draft. Dominique has a thought on the Texans. Dominique, what's going on?
Oh, I got a scenario here for the Texans. When the draft time comes in free agency, they should look at DeRon Payne, and then they also should draft Jalen Carter. Also, there's a quarterback they keep talking about, Bryce Young and Levis and C.J. Stroud, but there's a quarterback from Washington named Michael Penix. He got the same skill set. They could probably get him in the second or third round. Tell me, what do you think?
Okay, so you're throwing a lot of names at me right now. So, look, draft boards look one way, as you heard from Chris Landry. Now, you're going to hear a lot of those guys move all over the place. I feel like DeRon Payne, that's a random free agent to bring up. He's a defensive tackle for the Washington Commanders. He has 23 career sacks. He did play pretty well against the Houston Texans. Michael Penix from Washington, like his name is awesome.
He's also returning to Washington.
So that's not happening. And what was the second? Who was the second guy that he named?
Oh, Jalen Carter from Georgia. Georgia defensive line. He actually, they could probably trade down for, I don't know, the third, fourth pick, something like that, and get him.
I got to say, when you're throwing such specific scenarios at me, these are the kind of scenarios that aren't going to happen. You know, it's kind of... This is why I don't really like the mock draft season, because whenever somebody puts together a mock draft, they're generally going to be looking for specific players to fit certain teams, and then they might, because of that, like actually have an inappropriate draft order of where players go, because like, oh, well, this is perfect for this team. Well, what if he gets taken earlier? You know, like, so sorry. I hate to disappoint you, Dominique. Like, that's just not a conversation I want to have. Is that lame? Was that bad sports talk radio on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston?
Yeah, no, you should be like, Nick Caceres should be fired if they don't sign Daron Payne.
Yeah! 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. Can you call in with a random prospect that Sean Mapes and I can't Google that the Texans need to draft? You can do it. But coming up next, baseball's hot stove is heating up. And the best part about that hot stove is, while there were two big moves made yesterday, Justin Verlander to the Mets, Trey Turner to the Phillies, the best move of the day for the Astros, that's the one we're going to talk about. I'll tell you what that is next, but first I got to tell you about my friends at TGS Insurance, because they're saving money for our listeners on home insurance every single day. People know they're overpaying, so guess what they do? They text money to 232323 to get their instant quote. And the savings are legit. Some listeners who saved big on their home insurance are saving $800, $1,200, $1,900. From inside the loop to the suburbs, all the way to the coast, the average customer is saving over $800. So the time for you to save is right now. Grab your phone, text the word money, M-O-N-E-Y, to 232323. Their system will ask for your address. Send that back and you'll get your full quote with excellent coverage within 15 seconds. It's that easy to win, and with over 2,000 five-star reviews, this is a company you can trust. Simple, fast, easy, big savings. That's the TGS Insurance way. Let them work for you today. You're going to save money like all those folks that I just listed? Come on now. Find out. Text money 232323 to get your home insurance quote and save big today.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. When the lights come on, when the crowd goes wild. Real fun sports. This is the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Saw some big moves across baseball yesterday. Of course, Justin Verlander. He is a New York Met now. Two-year, $86 million deal he signs to go to New York. We have been sharing our favorite memories of Justin Verlander with the Houston Astros. I do think he deserves a hearty toast on his way out of town. The other big move from a signing a player perspective yesterday in baseball was something the Phillies did. Okay, Phillies, you want to get a little frisky here? The Phillies signed Trey Turner to a massive contract. 11 years, $300 million. He is described in the write-up by Jeff Passan as the best power speed player in baseball. All right. No trade clause. It ties him through 2033 with Philadelphia. He is the fourth shortstop to get into that $300 million club. Francisco Lindor, Fernando Tatis Jr., and the Rangers. I forgot the Rangers have Corey Seager. God, the Rangers are so dumb with the money they spent. I don't think this is the best idea for Philadelphia. Did Philadelphia seem like a team last year that was on the precipice of being a power for years to come? Or were they a team that sucked all regular season, maybe due to Bryce Harper being injured? By the way, he's injured again. Only going to be playing DH for them. And then got hot at the right time. Like, that's what they are. They got hot in the playoffs. They lost 13 of 20 to end the regular season. I think Philadelphia is getting a little big for its britches with a move like this. Whatever. Their money. They can spend it how they want. I do like that it keeps Turner out of the American League, because there's a team that, you know, in New York could have potentially signed him, right? And, I mean, we're still waiting for a lot of things on the New York Yankees front. But they did make a big move yesterday, guys, and it's time for another episode of Yankees Watch.
Yankees Watch.
Damn Yankees!
2022.
Aaron Judge? Nope. Trey Turner? Nope. The New York Yankees have re-signed Brian Cashman, their general manager, to a four-year contract through 2026 to continue serving as senior vice president and general manager. That was announced via a tweet yesterday at 2 o'clock. Oh my God, this is hysterical! Do you think that George Steinbrenner has rolled, I don't know, like a football field worth in his grave over all of the crap that the Yankees have done over the last 20 years? One title. That's it. Nothing since 2009. The biggest collapse in baseball history. One of the biggest collapses in sports history. And they are keeping Brian Cashman around. Sean Mapes behind the glass. Can you guess what this looked like on Twitter? This announcement that the Yankees put out. And I don't think they've had a press conference. Honestly, I don't think the press conference would go very well. Can you guess what the reception was from Yankee fans and everyone across baseball?
Oh, I mean, he's an institution there in the Bronx. So I imagine they're happy that he's back. Also, they can wait for the press conference and do... I'm sure all the free agent acquisitions and trades they're going to make, do those press conferences with the Brian Cashman one. But yeah, a Yankees fan's got to love this guy. He's been with the team for so long.
It's hysterical, Sean. I mean, look, James Click, in the 1 week that he didn't have a contract, was supposedly working for the Astros. Was Brian Cashman just not working and saying, well, I'm not going to get anything done until you guys give me a deal, and then Trey Turner gets signed by the Philadelphia Phillies, and maybe the Yankees thought to themselves, oh God, wait, Verlander got signed by the Mets today, too. We need Cashman back because we don't know anybody else. We don't have any alternatives. The reception on Twitter to this, Sean, for those who are unfamiliar with Twitter, generally when you see a tweet these days, you'll see the retweets, you'll see the likes. So it's got 868 retweets. It's got 5,948 likes right now. But when you see a bunch of quote tweets, that's usually because a bunch of people are commenting on it and think that it's dumb.
That's when you're getting dunked on.
Right. This is the equivalent of not quite a ratio, but getting dunked on. And it's close to being ratioed. 3,675 quote tweets of Brian Cashman. Some of the tweets.
Celebrating?
No, as one Yankee fan says, this is the equivalent to getting socks for Christmas. But hey, some socks are nice, right?
Yeah, socks. Good gift.
The Yankees have no desire to win and no care to try. Yankees not doing bleep this offseason. A lot of Astros fans are joking this might be the most significant offseason move for the Astros. Who needs Verlander and Trey Turner when you could have Brian Cashman? If this and Judge to San Fran happens on the same day, I may literally die of laughter. If Judge leaves, I hope I can use this tweet in a lawsuit, writes another Yankee fan. I love how the front office puts this out like they signed a $300 million free agent. See? Oh, wait a second.
See, he loves it. Yankees fans are happy. A lot of people are happy.
I guess
baseball fans everywhere are happy, to be honest.
I guess we're waiting until 2030 for a championship. I don't know. Might be 2033. Rewarding bad behavior. Man, I feel for you, Yankee fans. Life's hard. Life's hard. You can still say 27 rings, though, right? That'll get you through the pain. Maybe earlier today we were talking about the best goodbye songs for Justin Verlander. Well, maybe you need yourself a little extra Sarah McLachlan. I'm not talking about I Will Remember You. There's another song. In the arms of the angel, away from here. You know, because you, a Yankee fan, are like one of those poor, battered little puppies or kittens on the ASPCA Prevention for Cruelty to Animals ads. You know, you're trapped in the cage. You're being malnourished. No championships. No big contracts. Nobody of consequence joining your team. Disappointing postseason losses. Excuses from Aaron Boone. Excuses from Luis Severino. It's hard, guys. And I'm announcing right now a new movement here on the Paul Gallant Show, okay? We're going to start a GoFundMe. It's going to be a GoFundMe for battered Yankee fans, okay? It's hard. You know, the Astros are your daddy. Trey Turner and Verlander are going elsewhere, and you're re-signing Brian Cashman. For just $1 a day.
Less than a cup of coffee.
Well, New York cup of coffee. We might actually need to give him more than $1 because, you know, it costs a lot to buy a coffee at a bodega. It's like $10.99. But for just $1 a day, you can help some idiot inbred in the Bronx who spent some of his money's rent on a fake gold chain to wear over his wife beater with his Jorge Posada jersey around it. You can help that person have $1 towards buying alcohol so that he can get through this. Mad Dog 2020 is only $6.99. My thoughts go out to Yankee fans everywhere. It's got to be hard, okay? So make sure you check out that GoFundMe. This is the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coming up next, I went back to Toyota Center for the first time in a really long time. It was fun to see the Rockets win in two overtimes, but you know the real reason I went there, and oh boy, it was like porn. I'll tell you what I'm talking about next.
Loaded, ready to rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.